Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1604, air date October 31st, 2025.
All right, good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Shiva Ayyadure. This is our town hall that we do. The title of today's town hall is Harvard and MIT Tenured Professors, How They're the Brahmins of the Swarm. And in our video, you can see the members in our town hall who've come together. And I don't know if we can show them all. Are we broadcasting all of them? Okay, good. So what I want to talk about is this talk I'm going to give today is part of what I call as a part of the Fairness Lecture Series, part of our run for Shiva for Senate. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, our campaign has launched. So I'm running for United States Senate in Massachusetts. And the one word that we're going to hit throughout our campaign from now until the end of next November when we win the seat, because we're going to win this. And the reason we're going to win this is because people are waking up, working people, to this fundamental inequity that they're being screwed. And I want to talk about that before I go into this. Fairness. All the great religious texts, or even, you don't have to be religious. I think everyone can, or agrees to this principle, you should reap what you sow. If you work hard, and you're dedicated to something, and you put in the time, you should reap those rewards. I think everyone will agree with that. Everyone will also agree with those people who are scumbags, who manipulate, who cheat, who don't do the work, should not get those rewards, and in fact, should be penalized, should be punished. This is like such a basic principle that we've forgotten it. Fairness. Fairness, fairness, fairness. And what we've realized, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and if you just think about it, you have the so-called the left, and you have the right, and you have the middle. And the swarm, as you know what I've talked about, literally divides hardworking people in the middle by squeezing them from the left and the right. Like one piston from the left, one piston from the right. What is a piston from the left? Well, the quote unquote, the lefties or the Democrats claim they support working people, but they don't. They actually support what you can call the lumpen proletariat. Not really the proletariat, people who work hard, but the lumpen version. What does lumpen mean? Which means a criminal version, the people who do not work, people who scam the system, people who are living off all sorts of government subsidies, even though they don't deserve it, people who do crimes, never pay for their crimes. And the left claims to protect those people because they got the shaft. But when you really look at it, those people actually do not work. And therefore the right, quote unquote, rightfully attacks those people. They said, oh, these people are, you know, rapists and they're drug dealers and they're whatever, right? They don't work for a living. And it's true. But on the right, you have people like Jared Kushner. Just go look at his history. He was unqualified to enter Harvard. His father paid $2.4 million to get him in. He ran slumlord. He was a slumlord as a 22-year-old kid. Where did he get the money to buy homes and rent them? Obviously, his papa gave it to him. And then you can see he somehow enters the White House. He gets a $2 billion loan from the Saudis for his own venture fund. And it turns out even 2 years ago, they were planning the quote-unquote plan to change Gaza into a hotel strip mall. And this individual, who is part of the Wall Street, part of the Zionist bourgeoisie, he should be in jail, but he isn't. So the left will attack him, or people like Hunter Biden, or all those nepo babies on the right, and rightfully so, right? But the reality is that is being done so one wing of the working class in the middle becomes Democrat and the other wing becomes Republican. But the reality is the piston on the left of these lumpen elements and the piston on the right of the Jared Kushners and the Hunter Bidens, they're actually the same because they never pay for their crimes and they do not reap what they sow. They didn't work hard for any of those things. Jared Kushner didn't work hard to get $2 billion and neither did the lumpen guy on the left who bangs 6 women, 10 women, you know, has 20 kids and lives on welfare. But the people in the middle, hardworking people like myself, who's created companies, people like Nicholas who works, or Suresh who works as an IT worker, or Henry who's created many companies. These are the hardworking people who actually pay their taxes. They're all getting screwed. And who is representing them? Nobody. And our movement on the ground for our Senate election, not only in Massachusetts, but the message is going to be about fairness. Fairness, fairness, fairness. I was in India about a month ago at a conference in Delhi, and I'd been there 10 years ago. Well, the ride from the Delhi airport to the Oberoi Hotel is beautiful, but you go through other parts of Delhi, nothing has changed. The working people of India or Delhi are suffering. The bourgeois are doing well, and then the lumpen elements do well. But again, whether it's Massachusetts or the United States or the world, working people are getting screwed. No one's representing them. Now, as a part of this education process, we're going to talk about fairness, which is a very simple concept. We're going to begin right in the heart of Massachusetts, because I'm running for Senate in Massachusetts, and expose one of the most unfair elements, which is right here, right? But this set of people who are profiting from this unfairness are promoted as though somehow they're better than everyone. And I'm talking about the academics at two institutions, MIT and Harvard. I went to MIT, but I could never be part of that game because I saw that the people who became tenured professors didn't really work that hard, weren't really that innovative, but they knew how to ass kiss and play the game. And they got rewarded handsomely. It's actually quite unfair. And what I want to really talk about is I come from, many of you know, born into a caste system in India as a low caste untouchable. So I know the caste system. And in the Indian caste system, which goes back thousands of years, the caste system was divided in the following way. And what I want to talk to you about is that caste system has now been imported to the United States, and the ruling element of that caste system is based right out of Massachusetts, which is the headquarters of the intellectual part of the swarm. And that's what you're going to learn today. And that element of the caste system thrives on unfairness. So what do I mean by this? So first of all, the caste system was structured the following way. If you want to draw it, you can draw a little triangle, and you could separate and you could put lines along, you know, horizontal lines going across that triangle. And so you'll get little, at the top of you, you'll get a mini triangle. That was called the Brahmins. Now, the Brahmins were the learned ones, scholars. Originally, before the caste system, you had to work hard to become a scholar. You know, you studied the books and you studied science and you studied the scriptures. It wasn't you were just handed it. But at some point in the Indian caste system, if your father was a Brahmin, you became a Brahmin. You see? And that's where the unfairness came. It was based on the birth lottery, not on hard work. But there was a time where Brahmin meant like a scientist, a scholar. Okay, but anyway, nonetheless, when the caste system got formed in India, if you were a Brahmin, your son became a Brahmin. So that and what is a Brahmin? A Brahmin were the elite priesthood, the scholars, the quote-unquote learned ones, who would come up with ideas. And ideas were much more powerful than anything, right? Because you advanced the direction of society. So the Brahmins were the priesthood. And they would influence the level below. So if you take your triangle, you know, the next level was called the Rajas, R-A-J-A-S, or the kings, or the politicians. So the Brahmins are the ones who would speak into the ears of the kings or the politicians and tell them what to do, okay? So the king wielded power, but the directionality of his power came from the Brahmins. Is that clear? So the Brahmins told the kings what to do, and the kings listened to them because they believed the Brahmins were connected directly to quote-unquote God, and therefore they should listen to them, quote-unquote the priesthood. The kings then ruled over the next level below that, which was called the warriors, because they would direct the military what to do. Okay? Military warriors. And then the military did their calling to protect the next level below, which was the business people, right? The people who conducted, the traders and the business people. And then one level below that was the Shudras, or the untouchables, which was basically people who actually did, you know, the day-to-day work. So that was, and by the way, you can refine this more, but that was broadly the Indian caste system. So what I want to go over is, who were these ancient Brahmins, the modern Brahmins? These are these tenured faculty at Harvard and MIT. I want to then talk about the fact that these people who are tenured professors, and when you hear the numbers and I share these facts, you're going to get very angry, because these people, after 7 years of working, they can get a job for life. For life. And they actually get all sorts of welfare benefits, and they make about $1.8 million a year when you add up all their compensation. A woman like Elizabeth Warren, a person like Alan Dershowitz, okay, or Lawrence Tribe. These are professors at Harvard. Versus $40,000, which is what the average worker is making. And they also get hidden perks, okay? We're going to talk about the mechanisms of power. And I'm going to talk about a case study of how these people influence, through their ideas, trillions or billions of dollars that get moved all over the world. And this is a Brahmin caste system of 2025. And then we're going to talk about why this must end. And then I'm going to contrast the unfairness of a hardworking worker in Massachusetts or in the United States, or for that matter in the world, versus one of these Brahmins. And you're going to realize that Massachusetts is where Harvard's or MIT's Vatican is, and why we have to win this global revolution, and why that revolution can start right here with our winning the US Senate seat. Because that's really going to be the killer of the Brahmins. And so let's begin. Many of you know, you know, I came from this low caste, untouchable environment, born in India. I used to be denied entry into homes of the Brahmins. They used to tell me as a child to stay outside because, you know, we were lower caste. So I've seen this. I've seen directly the way that they segregate people. And, you know, my family came here in 1970 to escape a lot of that. And it was in the United States at a time when I came in the 70s. To get into a place like MIT, you actually had to do the work. Well, now things have changed a lot. When I went to MIT, when I went to school, I actually had to take the SATs. My parents can afford consultants. Now wealthy kids, their parents pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to hire consultants to get them into places like MIT and Harvard. When I was in Hong Kong, you know, there are wealthy Chinese who are paying people $600 an hour for their kids. in high school to get their kids into Yale and MIT and Harvard. It's completely unfair. It's not what it was like in the 70s. It's completely rigged. People like Booby fucking Kennedy didn't even have to apply to Harvard. He just had to put his name on, and his parents, because of the money they gave to Harvard, get in. Or same with Jared Kushner, et cetera. Now, why is this important? Because when you get a Harvard label, you immediately become part of the priesthood. So what's happening now in the modern times is dumb, wealthy kids are getting Harvard, MIT labels, and overnight they're part of the club. It's very, very unfair. Poor, smart kids can't do this. It's unfair. So, you know, given my journey, you know, my view is our movement, myself, we're here to shatter the swarm, and Harvard's next. And we have an opportunity in the Senate election because this, the Brahmins of the swarm reside right here in Massachusetts. They're the ones who frankly defile everyone all over the planet. Now, in the ancient, so let me give you a little bit of analysis here. In ancient times, the Brahmins, they were the priesthood. Why? Well, they were considered the guardians of knowledge. And the power they had were over the Vedas. They controlled what rituals you did and through the language called Sanskrit. Okay? So they had their language, you see, that they used to, that only the Brahmins knew. They were advisors to the king. No king could get crowned without the sanction of the Brahmins. You think about it, and I'll talk about it later on. Henry Kissinger came out of Harvard. He was a Brahmin. Kings, politicians came and went, but he was very, very influential determining who the next president would be. Third part was they legitimized the rule, right? They would perform these rituals, right? That legitimized whoever was ruling at the time. They were educators of the elites. They're the ones who trained the princess or other royalty. And just think about who goes to places like Harvard, okay? The next generation of tech, or MIT, the next generation of technocrats, the next generation of people who run Silicon Valley, the next generation of people become the rulers of Japan or Saudi Arabia, et cetera. And the other thing was the Brahmins were exempt from tax and they didn't have to work labor. They didn't have to do any physical labor and they didn't have to pay any taxes. Harvard, MIT don't pay any taxes. So they lived off begging and gifts, quote unquote, from the working people. So what's interesting is the Brahmins were not the wealthiest, but they were indispensable. Okay? They were not the wealthiest, but they were indispensable. That's what's very interesting. Now you compare that to the modern Brahmins, and you'll see the connection here, which are a professor, a tenured professor. If you don't know what tenured is, so when you become a graduate student, then you become a professor at MIT or Harvard, they give you 7 years to prove your value. If in those 7 years you do quote unquote research they like, then guess what? You get a job forever. You never even have to work. You get paid close to $1.5 to $8 million forever, a lifetime value of $50 to $70 million. Okay? No one else gets a job forever. That's what tenure means. Again, here, they too are the guardians of knowledge. They own the peer-reviewed journals. What is a peer-reviewed journal? There are about 5 or 10 journals, scientific journals in the world, that if you get to publish in those, you get to control the destiny of science, mathematics, engineering, health. By way of example, as I've mentioned this many times, there's a professor who was head of one of the peer-reviewed journals, and he wrote the thesis on Alzheimer's based on the plaque hypothesis. Complete bullshit. Photoshopped pictures, and for 16 years, $3.7 billion of taxpayer money went into this flawed theory of Alzheimer's. Okay? That's how they control. So they own the journals, and they control them. Just like the Brahmins were advisors to kings, or the old Brahmins, the modern Harvard Brahmins or MIT Brahmins are advisors to presidents. They're in the White House, the Federal Reserve, the World Bank, right? That's power. They're legitimizers of policy. They're the ones who determine what is truth, evidence-based research, right? They educate the elite. 8 US presidents came out of Harvard, 100 plus billionaires came out of Harvard. And they're exempt from the market. They get tenure, they get a lifetime job. So it's a very same structure. The new temple is places like Harvard and MIT. And they're the Brahmins, and they're right here in Massachusetts. Now, let me give you their compensation. I did a compensation analysis. So the average US worker makes $40,000, the median US worker wage, okay? That means if you look over 20 years, the average worker is making about $800,000. When it comes to housing, most of them either pay rent or they have to have a mortgage and they struggle. And they don't get a job security for life, it's at will. Their employer can fire them at any point. Okay, so that's the hardworking middle. The middle hardworking worker in the United States. Now compare that to this Harvard elite tenured professor. Their annual salary with cash and benefits, I'm gonna show you, comes to about $900,000 to $1.8 million per year. The lifetime value of that is $25 to $45 million a year. They get housing subsidized. A Cambridge home, which is $2 million plus. Think about this. A professor at Harvard is getting subsidized housing. And by the way, Harvard is a nonprofit institution. If you look between Harvard Square to Central Square, Harvard owns most of the real estate and they don't have to pay any taxes. Sound familiar? Everyone else is paying taxes, but they don't. They get job security. They get tenure. They can only be fired if there's only one condition, if they had a felony. So if you look at it between the average hardworking American worker to a Harvard elite professor, it's 23x to 45 times X income gap. So this is not a left or right issue. This is a fact that these people are being treated like royalty. And by the way, when you look at their benefits, let me make it a little more illustrative. Their base salary is about 400 to 850K. They get the best healthcare, the best retirement benefits, another 150K to 250K. They get sabbaticals, right? Because they don't, by the way, once you get tenure, you don't really have to work. Maybe you're teaching one or two classes. Your sabbatical is you get another 40 to 60K because you can take 6 weeks, 8 weeks off and you're being paid. You get a housing subsidy, 40 to 60K. You get travel and speaking opportunities, which is 100 to 300K. And you get access to a network. Celebrities, kings, princesses, you know, policymakers, billionaires. I mean, you're going to parties pretty much every weekend. You get access to people. It's infinite. So this totals up to about $1.8 million a year. Now, also remember, a Harvard tenured professor gets access to, you know, 5 to 10 graduate students, so they're paying only 20K when they're actually worth 80K. So you're getting also slave labor who does all your work. So just think about that. A 40-year-old tenured professor who for the next 40 years doesn't have to work ever again is getting paid about $1.8 million per year and gets, frankly, free food, free healthcare. And in fact, if their kids get into a college, those kids get free tuition. How does a postal worker get any of these benefits? Compare that to the average hardworking person. Just think about this. And this is never talked about anywhere. Now, the mechanisms of power that these people wield then and now is the following. In the old days, they had the Vedic chants, you know, the Brahmins would do the mantras. Now you have policies. You know, before they did the king's coronation. Now, you know, Harvard professors are involved in presidential appointments. Before they had the temple tax exemption, right? Now you have tenure and grants. before they controlled knowledge by who could speak Sanskrit. Now they control knowledge by whose papers get published through citations. So when you look at this, this is truly the modern Brahmanical system. It parallels it almost exactly the same. And the idea that I want to talk about is that their influence is how they can influence massive ideas globally, okay? So one guy can come up with a theory of Alzheimer's. Someone else can come with a theory of some economic theory. And they say behind every economic crash, you can find a Harvard professor, right? They come up with ideas which influence trillions of dollars distribution, which ultimately help the elites amass more and more wealth, and workers lose. These professors win. And so 1% of these people are actually controlling 99% of what you call knowledge capital. Okay? What's the problem with this? Well, you have monopolization of ideas. That stifles dissent. You have credential gatekeeping, right? Outsiders are blocked. And they capture policies. And they are gaining wealth without work. Their $1.8 million, by the way, when you work it out per year, you know what, how many hours are actually working? 6 hours a week. Let me repeat that again. For $1.8 million a year, these tenured professors are working 6 hours a week. So tenure, you know, they have no accountability. Let me contrast that to a nurse or a truck driver who works 50 to 60 hours a week. They risk physical burnout. There's no physical burnout for Harvard professors, tenured professors. Their pay is 40 to 70K. You know, here we're talking about 1.8 million. Their influence, the truck driver or the nurse has zero influence. A Harvard professor has global influence. At best, a truck driver or nurse gets Social Security as retirement. Well, a Harvard professor gets minimum $250,000 a year for retirement for the rest of their lives. Now tell me, is this fair? And this is what I call DEI. You know, by the way, if you notice, they call it, you know, the right used to attack the left on DEI, but Trump's granddaughter, who by the way, got 58th worst golf player, she gets to go to the LPGA and play, which is supposed to be based on meritocracy. Jared Kushner gets to go hang out Ivanka Trump. These people are actually DEI. Really think about it. Who is actually DEI? Okay. It's the people who are not actually working. So when you compare this, why should a Harvard professor have this much influence, make this much money, not have to work this much? And who's actually contributing more to society? A nurse and a truck driver or a Harvard professor? When you look at it, who's actually helping other human beings more? I would argue it's the nurse and the truck driver. But because of this unfair system, it's flipped. Okay? So when you sort of pull this all together and you add it all up, there's 8.2 billion of us, and there's only 3,000 of these people. So it's, if you add it up, it's 0.0006% of people are controlling 8.2 billion people. We talk about the 1%, but this is far less than 1%. And Massachusetts is Brahmin headquarters. The modern Brahmin headquarter is located right here. And that's why us winning a Senate seat in Massachusetts, someone of my background, a low caste untouchable from India, and this is why they don't know what to do with us, and this is why they have to shadow ban us. Because I was supposed to be part of that caste system and I couldn't join it. You see, because my loyalty was always to the middle, working people. And this is why the invention of email bothers them, because it took place before I came to MIT. You see, this is why it's so dangerous, because the invention of email or my story or all of our stories reveals the fact that it's the hardworking people who actually are contributing. This is why they hate us so much. This is why they have to divide us so much, because they don't fucking work. And I wanted to really today educate you on this absolute unfairness that's occurring right out of here in Massachusetts, right? So what should we do? Well, first of all, the policies that need to happen is, number one, places like Harvard, MIT, Stanford, Yale, by the way, they're all running as nonprofits. That status should be removed. These universities that have, as I've shown in many videos, are actually multi-billion dollar hedge funds. They're basically, they're running quote unquote education, but what they actually are running is a hedge fund that takes billions of dollars, they invest on Wall Street, and it just so happens they're doing some education. But on the one hand, they're making billions of dollars through their endowment investments, and they have this priesthood. So they get the best of both worlds. So their nonprofit status must be removed. Our team is actually working on a bill. We'll have it ready, and we're going to talk about that. Number two, legacy admissions. So the way they perpetuate themselves is 40 to 50%, at least at Harvard, is legacy. You can be a dumb fuck, but if your father or mother gives money to them, your son gets the Harvard degree. And then they get to perpetuate themselves as though they're with that label that they're smart. Any institution, any federally funded institution, which is what Harvard is, that gets legacy admission, that has legacy admissions, all of those degrees should be retroactively taken away because they weren't legitimate degrees. That means Booby Kennedy should have his degree taken away. Jared Kushner should give his degree back because they're actually getting the Brahmin label for work that they did not do. Okay? Tenure should end in all these institutions. All these guys should be booted out. They shouldn't get jobs for life, especially given the fact that they're federally funded by our tax dollars. So we, the working people, are funding these scumbags so they can get $1.8 million a year in salary. Finally, what I want to let everyone know is, what can you do? I'm going to do a series of these talks of unfairness, but we want to focus on the priesthood to start with, because out of them, they're the ones who've instituted these policies. Everyone here should go to Shiva for Senate. You should donate and volunteer. We got to get people in Massachusetts talking. Everyone here can pick up the phone. We have phone lists to talk to people in Massachusetts, people who've supported us, and get them to pledge to vote for us, because we got to bury these Brahmins. And this today is the beginning of this fairness lecture series that I'm going to do. And we're going to do a series of podcasts with me and a couple of other people, roundtables, to really hit all of these issues. So we win in Massachusetts. We're actually destroying, in many ways, cutting the head off this global caste system worldwide. And they're going to squeal when this happens. This is why we have such a huge opportunity in 2026. And I suggest everyone wake up and realize that everyone here on this town hall and everyone who wants to participate can be part of this. Because when I get, you know, put into the Senate, we should have a massive party of 100,000, hundreds of thousands of people celebrating. And the celebration should be that you as individuals made this occur. And this is going to be a very powerful example of what happens when people together. And with the infrastructure we build here, we could do it in another country on some other issue for another candidate. We can show how people coming together, focus in a particular area, going neighbor to neighbor. We don't need fucking social media. We don't need their advertising. We don't need their airwaves. We don't need any of that. It's people power. And that's what I want people to experience with this campaign, because there's no way to beat these guys on their battleground, on their debates, on their TV shows, on their social media platforms. You can't defeat the swarm using the swarm's vehicles. We have to do it completely different. So I encourage everyone here to get involved. Everyone, today, because between now, it's going to go very, very fast. We need everyone here doing this so I can go do these educational talks on fairness, because it takes time for me to prepare, you know, get other people organized. But if all of you can roll up your sleeves and even give a little bit of time to make sure people in Massachusetts are pledging, we're going to win. And there's, I see a very, very clear path to victory, because we don't have to spend tens of millions of dollars, because a lot of people in Massachusetts already know about our movement and, you know, who is Dr. Shiva. I say that in the third person from a name brand recognition, because it takes a lot to get, you know, name brand recognition. That's why they have to spend 40, 50 million bucks. We don't need to do that. We just need people to call, get ready to roll up their sleeves and make phone calls. But the bottom line is we're going to focus on fairness. It is very, very unfair that there's a category of people who get this much influence, this much money. You know, they get gym memberships for free. They get to go to Pilates courses for free. They get to go vacations and conferences. You don't get that. Average working people don't get that. They get to go on private jets for free, right? They get to hobnob with the most illustrious people for free. That's what they are the Brahmins, and they need to be shattered. We'll take any questions, but I hope it's very clear to you the level of unfairness. So when you see one of these tenured Harvard professors talking stuff and telling you how the world is, and they understand jack shit. They don't live the life of the middle. And again, let me really emphasize this: the middle, the hardworking people, they're being divided into left and right, and that's not going to work. We need to shatter the left, shatter the right, and the middle must grow, but there's no one representing the middle except our movement. So it's going to be a historic opportunity. Everyone here can make a few phone calls, get six people to pledge, and that's a huge thing. It just goes viral after that, and we don't need social media. We don't need radio advertising. We don't need social media we don't need any of that. We just need you guys. Let's take some questions.
Yeah, and everyone, please put your questions in the chat. Do not raise your hand. We will be only taking questions that they are sent in the chat. So message your questions to any of the co-hosts or to Dr. Shiva, please. Thank you.
Everyone here probably knows people in Massachusetts. If you know them, talk to Andrew or Nicholas or Crystal or Suresh. They'll show you how you can help. It's just going to be through word of mouth, old school. And we've set up some very nice technology that everyone here can use that technology to do ground activity to get people mobilized. Any questions? I mean, I can go more deeper into the level of unfairness, how a very, very, very finite set of people have this much influence on policy all over the world. Global policy. Okay. Here's something coming in. Let's see. Yeah, so someone says, how do we prevent them from stealing your victory? So one of the important things is, let me just give you some of the numbers. 4.7 million registered voters in Massachusetts. 2.2 million will actually vote. And in Massachusetts, 9% are Republicans, 35% are Democrats, the remaining 56% are independents. We're running as an independent, okay? So that's sort of the landscape. One of the important things we're gonna be doing is we're setting up a system, which we don't wanna talk about openly. We talk about it in our Shiv for Senate volunteer meetings is we're setting up a system that we will capture every vote and we will get the ballot image of every vote and we will be tracking this independently. So if there's any fraud like that occurred last time, we'll have the receipts. So that's what we're setting up. We're doing it independently. And we'll be able to quote unquote count the votes in real time in a parallel system. So we have a, we know what to do. You know, we are, after all, technologists, and we know how to build our own technology. So we're actually working on doing that, and it should be done, you know, shortly, that we're going to track the votes ourselves. Yes, there is mail-in voting in Massachusetts. In fact, so mail-in voting, to let everyone know, people are outside of the United States. Typically, in other countries, there's one voting day. You go to the booths, and then you vote. Okay? In the United States, I think even up to a month before, they send the ballots in the mail. And then you fill in the ballot in the mail, and you send it back in the mail. So in some ways, voting is occurring over a 1 month period. Can you demand a ballot hand count? And do you need to request prior to election? Yeah, you can, so here's the thing. There's ways to do this if the votes are very, very close. Right? I think it's 1-2%. But that's why when they cheat big. But you can determine that. Henry says, how are you going to connect with the truck driver in the Berkshire? He'll not care about Cambridge, I don't think. Broadly, the truck driver in the Berkshire does care. I don't know how many truck drivers are in the Berkshires because we've been out there. A lot of liberals out in the Berkshires. But nonetheless, I think if you look at Massachusetts, Central Mass, Henry, most of Central Mass has working people. And I think the working people in Massachusetts are aware of their hatred in some ways or their dislike for these academics who actually don't do much. So I think it's not Cambridge, but I think it's more broadly because you have the same academic type of elites even in way Western Mass, not Central Mass. So I think it's targeting people with the notion of this unfair. I'll give you another. We're going to start with the unfairness about these academics. Another important area that you can talk about unfairness, which we're going to talk about in one of the videos, we're sort of organizing this. Let's talk about student loans, okay? Joe Biden wanted to relieve all students. So in the United States, if you go to college, and you don't come from a wealthy family, either you have to pay for your tuition or you have to take a loan. Okay? So there are many working class, hardworking people who took loans. And you have to, I mean, when I took my loan for college, I think I got a scholarship, but I also had to pay, I think it was pretty low, 3-4%. Now it's much higher and it compounds itself. So when I finished school, I paid off all my loans. There are other people who don't pay their loans and they sort of try to wheedle their way out. Joe Biden was going to give everyone a free ride, okay, relieve all loans, but that obviously taxpayers pay for it. My model on fairness, reap what you sow. And by the way, the loans really shouldn't be called a student loan because the money the parents take on behalf of their kids goes to the university, and the university actually takes those monies and they invest it in the stock market, so they actually make a lot of money. So here's a fair model. Let's say Nicholas went to college, has paid all of his student loans. My view is that if you're paying your student loans and you're working hard, the interest should go away. Screw the interest. These student loan companies don't deserve to make this much interest. They should be happy to get back their principal. If you already paid your loans, you should get a rebate on the interest. So now that's a fair policy. And if you don't pay your loans back, well, the government should go after you. So we're talking about fairness, okay? In every aspect of policymaking, we should talk about fairness, who is working hard and who should be rewarded for their hard work. And that's what our movement's gonna focus on, this very North Star of what is fair, who is putting in the work and who is not. Okay, some of the other questions. No, this time we're running against a guy called Ed Markey, but he may actually retire. So if anyone has any ideas in areas, and this notion of fairness is what we want to take, fairness for the working person who works hard. And I'll give you another example on the other extreme. The entire criminal justice system in the United States rewards people who do crime. You can be a first-time offender, second-time offender, third-time, and you're back on the street. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I have a home that I bought many, many years ago, which I let my parents stay in. When I moved to another home, and when my dad passed away a couple of years ago, I decided I was going to take that home, you know, refurbish it and either rent it or sell it, likely going to sell it. But anyway, I was interviewing different contractors. And, you know, as many of you know, to hire people to do any work these days, it's almost a crapshoot. You got to talk to 100 people to get one person who actually shows up to work. Anyway, one of these contractors came. And he turned out to be a complete fraud. And I didn't hire him. He didn't have a proper certificate of insurance. When I found out it was fraudulent, he threatened me. Anyway, we called the cops on him. It turns out this guy, and when the cops came, he ran up to them and said, "I'm a former state trooper." Anyway, he wasn't. So anyway, here's a guy, it turns out we did some research on him. He was put in jail for 3 years for impersonating a state trooper, stealing a truck, forging checks, and he was actually a former policeman, not a state trooper. Well, he suffers no consequences. He still gets to do his things. And if you look at the entire criminal justice system, on the left, the entire criminal justice system actually supports people who do crime. And there is no consequences, just like on the right. There's no consequence if people do insider trading, really. So similarly, there should be fairness on that side. And we'll talk about that. So we're talking about fairness, not on the left, not on the right, but for both sides. And I think people, not only in Massachusetts, the United States, but in the world are ready for some fairness. And I believe the policies that we're going to put out there that really hit at this, people are going to say, wow, that makes sense. That's fair. Oh, that makes sense. That's fair. We're not getting that from either the left or the right today. Everything is intended to divide the middle, the working class, into left and right. But if we focus on fairness, policies that make the left and the right accountable, it's going to be quite unique. Yeah, that aspect of universities being a cosigner to a loan, I came up with that idea nearly 8 years ago. As you're aware of, Noel. Great. So be ready every Thursdays. We're going to do a sort of a talk on one aspect of fairness. We're going to roll them out. Andrew Rice is working on the schedule. Unlike where we sort of put out the talk titles ahead, you know, on the day, we're going to be putting them as events for the next 10 months right away, so everyone can see what's coming and people can participate in potentially giving us ideas of this. But it's going to be about fairness, 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 and talks on that. All right, thank you, everyone. There's no other questions. Nicholas, I think you can introduce some of the new people.
Yeah, we can go into that.
I would suggest before you and you ask those people, make people accountable here to get people to volunteer. okay, as we talked about, help build this with the Senate campaign.
All right. Thanks, well, thanks Dr. Shiva.
Yep. Thank you, Dr. Shiva.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that. And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left-wing, right-wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train a army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up. Working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement, and that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done, and it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own, quote unquote, people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhealth.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics. And I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. And the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhealth.com, so people can sign in, they can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhealth.com. Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building, and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine. But I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inter-office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosol, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light, learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.